to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, no bank stacks and jacks. I'm tonight. Mr. Weber on the board. SP futures up 250. Dow futures up 45. NASDAQ futures down 1375. It was a NASDAQ that took the big hit yesterday, over 2%. But today doesn't look like we're going to keep heading, at least maybe not right now. Lou, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, sir.
What's the good word? What's the good word out of Colorado?
Good word out of Colorado is we got a snowstorm finally arriving, and we're gonna break the back of this dry spell. The humidity in Denver yesterday, at least according to my weather app, was 5%. And it doesn't get much drier than that. The dew point was minus 21 Fahrenheit. And so the good news in Colorado is that we're getting a low pressure system that's coming in that's going to bring snow into the mountains, which the ski resorts will be delirious about. And maybe we'll see some moisture here in the Front Range as well.
Well, they're not looking to open early this year, are they?
Well, they're open, but they're working with almost exclusively with man-made snow. And if you look at any of the video coming out of places like Copper Mountain or Aspen or Vail, you'll see white ribbons going down the mountain, but it's brown everywhere else.
That's always interesting.
Yeah. There's snow. I mean, obviously, there's snow lingering at the upper elevations, above the tree line. You can see that, but it's not consistent. It's very thin, and you obviously can't ski on that stuff.
Well, you can't very well. You could try.
Well, I mean, you could fall. You could fall down it, I guess. So anyway, that's the good news here, and we're hoping for. Again, moisture just to come in. It's been unbelievably dry here for the last couple of months. So I'm going to be I'm hoping that we're seeing a weather pattern change here, so we start getting some more moisture. Everybody here thinks about snow in terms of skiing, and but if you have a house up in the mountains or you live up there, the biggest thing you think about with snow is ground moisture and what that means for the fire season next year. So the more snow we get, the more ground moisture there is, the danger of fire is reduced. And I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that we have a wet winter.
You guys need a breakout year. You need water in Lake Mead. You need water everywhere.
Yeah. Well, it's snowpack. We had a pretty good snowpack last year. A lot of it came after the start of the year, but snowpack obviously fuels everything here. And I mean, we've talked about this, but my question in watching the geometric expansion of Denver and surrounding environs is where's the water going to come for this huge influx of people that we've seen and businesses that we're seeing here in the Front Range. We're not catching it. And it's a lot of everybody's moving here, it seems. We're seeing an explosion of housing and business development, and the construction cranes are up all over the metropolitan area. And I keep asking the question, where is the water going to come from that will, that's going to allow these people to stay here. And I'm not seeing it. I mean, I have one client, I think I told you, one client who is actually pumping water out of abandoned mines up in the mountains. There are old mines with, 60, 70 miles of tunnels, multiple levels of tunnels inside a mountain. And those things are natural traps for water. And this guy has figured out how to purify it, take the metals out, take the particulates out, and pump it, you know, 60, 70, 80 miles through existing water systems to supplement the water here. And it's a ongoing business concern, but that is a measure. The fact that that is cost effective is a measure of the need for water.
No, it's a, it is, when you say that it's a, you know, where's the next water for the next person going to come from? It seems to me it's almost like the interesting part about doing the show, you know, always has been to me, is the difference between the stories and how things kind of lap together. And it comes down to being, there is only one story or something, or only a couple of stories. What you're talking about is, you look at some of these IPOs that are priced this week, and the incredible value they're putting on these companies, to the point where if you want to look at the market right now, you look at, last year or the year before, it was, you had to look at the FANGs. I mean, I have all kinds of clients, and God help you if you had them in, you know, the S&P or even worse, the Russell up until recently, instead of the Qs. Well, the market's up 25%. No, the market isn't. These five stocks are. Yeah, well, why wasn't in the five stocks? Well, you didn't want to be in the five. You know, that kind of stuff. So you get to this thing where people focus, but nobody looks at the next piece. You know, now the stocks that people are going after aren't even in the S&P. You're looking at DoorDash, those kinds of places. I mean, the huge valuations of stuff that's doubling in 2 weeks is not even in the S&P. It's not in the,
well,
not even in the Qs.
Isn't this just a repeat of the tech bubble we saw in the early
days? Looks like 2000 all over again, or 1999.
Yeah, you put .com behind your name in 2000, and you instantly had an IPO value of a couple of million bucks before your product was even out the door.
Well, then it's the beauty of going out there and getting it while you can, or buying other companies with your stock while you know it's worthless and other people don't. But what I'm saying is the idea that where's this next bucket of water going to come from? I mean, people have looked at that. It'd be just like if I went on CNBC and talked about the Fed and talked about 2000. You know, one of the good-looking young ladies is going to say to me, "Hey, buddy, if you're right, how come it hasn't happened yet?" You know, and the simple fact is, if Maddie Weber and the lovely bride decide, screw Chicago, I'm moving to Denver, they can go buy a house or get an apartment. Guess what? They turn the water on, the water comes on. The thought that they'll be the last person where they turn it on and they'll say, "Sorry, Matt, you're the last guy to move in. We told you not to." And then he goes in to flush the toilet, and guess what? It doesn't flush. I mean, the thought of to somebody that is going to happen, or right now that there's going to be a market crash, or all of a sudden, you know, DoorDash, instead of being 189 bucks, is 9 bucks or something bizarre like that happened in 2000. It's not even crossing anybody's mind, Lou. I mean, you would, if you talk to somebody 25 who wants to move to Denver, the thought of you saying, "Well, you know, you're going to turn the faucet on one day and there's going to be nothing there," they're going to look at you like you got four heads. It just hasn't happened yet.
Well, this is something we've talked about obviously before. I lived through, or at least an area that I was living in, here on the Front Range, you know, 40 years ago, turned off the building permits because of water issues. That was Colorado Springs. And people here have forgotten about that. When I mention it to folks, and maybe the reason they've forgotten about it is because almost everybody I know is not a native here. They all moved here. But that happened. Colorado Springs turned off the building permits for, I think it was 5 years. And I'm just trying to imagine a municipality doing that now. And saying, you know, we're not going to allow any more buildings. We're not going to allow any more developments. And watch the outrage that would occur. One of the things you see here in Denver is the incredible multiplication of high density housing. And people here talk about that and they say, "My God, you know, we're seeing, you know, multiple 5 and 6 story apartment buildings being constructed all over the place." Most areas here have height restrictions on buildings, so because they want people to be able to see the Front Range. But you know, the idea that, again, where's the water coming from? I have not heard that discussion. You know, in Chicago, you guys can build your 100-story apartment condominium towers and throw those things up, and there's no issue on water. In fact, my understanding is you've got too much of it right now.
Way too much, yeah, way too much.
But here, there's absolutely no discussion of one of the most basic elements of you know, population growth and population demand, and it's astounding to me that's the case.
Well, for those, let's take, since we've been talking about it, let's take 2 minutes, and I'll give a little bit of the history of Western water versus Midwest water. Colorado is going to build this dam. What's the name of that damn thing? How's that for a pun? On the Platte River, right? What's the name of that thing? And it allegedly got stopped because of the snail darter, right?
I know there was a discussion about trying to, you know, the Platte, damming the Platte is almost an oxymoron, because the Platte, I don't think, is more than about 8 or 10 inches deep for all of its.
But there was going to be a dam on the very basic. When the air comes from the Pacific, even if it has moisture in it, it goes up the mountains, it gets to the top, it gets colder, it dumps all the snow on the western part of the divide. In the front, the front range, what Lou's talking about, gets some storms now and then, but basically your everyday dump takes place on the other side of the divide, right, in wintertime.
Yeah, and the continental divide runs right down the center of Colorado for the most part.
Right. So, I mean, I'm just trying to be brief here, but so the idea of putting this dam on the Platte Riverside, like Lou says, there's no water there. Well, duh. So the whole trick is, how do you, and this has been a trick in
I mean, a beaver could dam the Platte River right now.
Well, what I'm saying is, but you say, well, what's the difference? Well, the fight is that none of this water is considered to be Colorado's water. So the water that dumps on the left side, the western side, is considered Colorado River drainage, and the right side is Platte River drainage. On the western side, the Colorado goes down to Lake Mead. It feeds California. It feeds Arizona. It feeds all those places. So all these states are sort of involved. So when you're talking about Denver fighting for water, actually there's a spot up on, you know what I'm talking about, Lou. If you go up to Breckenridge and you go south of there, you go over to the divide. You're way the hell up on this little
Hoosier,
road.
Hoosier Pass.
And across the thing is this reservoir where these two knucklehead buddies of mine took me fishing. And my idea of fishing is going to the restaurant depot and buying some, right?
I think you're either talking about maybe Lake Antero or 11 Mile Reservoir.
Well, it was way the hell up there. And of course, there's this little hole, for lack of a better term, tunnel, I guess, that they snuck through to the other side, because we're on the Platte River side, and there was water coming through from the western side, which I think probably they did while nobody was looking. So the whole trick is, if you built the dam, is how do we fill up water from the dam? And they were going to run a pipe from the Dillon Reservoir. So essentially it was all, they were going to have to fill the reservoir up with water from the other side of the divide. So of course this made it into court, and the whole idea about the snail darter was such BS, it had nothing to do with the snail darter. The whole idea is, if Denver can take water from the other side of the divide, the water doesn't make it to the Colorado River, doesn't make it to Lake Mead, doesn't make it to Phoenix. So essentially,
or L.A.,
but really more Phoenix, because they've got those two big canals that go from the Colorado River to Phoenix. Well, both, you're right. It's more like Vegas and Phoenix. But the point being is, it's really a fight between Phoenix's suburbs and Denver's suburbs and Colorado water. Which, if you're from the Midwest, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But that
right.
is the fight.
Yeah, the idea that somebody in Missouri or Texas would have a claim on rainfall in Illinois is crazy,
right,
to the average Midwesterner.
Right, but the water that comes off the western slope is considered part of the Colorado River Basin, and all the parts states that are in that basin have access. I mean, the rights are, I mean, if you have my buddy was telling me that if you have if you have river rights to, say, the Fox River, I mean, maybe you get to put up a dock if you want. Over there, you can actually put like a wire across it and cut people's heads off. You can even stop people from going by, can't you? If you have water rights on a stream in Colorado?
I believe that's correct. I don't know the exact status of that now, but that used to be correct. You could stop navigation. You could stop people from even floating on a water source or a river or whatever through an area. And again, this will sound crazy to people in Chicago, but we've mentioned it before here. I don't own the rain that falls on my mountain property. I don't own that rain. When it hits the ground, it belongs to somebody else.
If you put up a whiskey barrel to catch it, they're going to give you a ticket.
I'm actually allowed to put up one rain barrel, I believe, one 50-gallon rain barrel on my property to take runoff off the roof of my house. But as for the rest of it, no. That water belongs to the Santa Fe to Atchison Topeka Railroad or whoever it is that bought the water rights back 150 years ago.
Well, see, in Arizona.
I know that sounds insane, but that's the way it is. And, you know, we saw a rather dramatic demonstration of that in a little area near called Midland, which is near where the house is. It had been a fishing camp that had been set up. Originally, it was a watering station for steam engines that were running between Colorado Springs, Pueblo, and Cripple Creek, the big mining town. They put catchment ponds in there, and it ultimately reverted to the federal government, and the federal government turned it into a fishing camp, a recreation area for airmen and Fort Carson and the U.S. Air Force bases in Colorado Springs. That ultimately reverted back to private ownership, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, but nobody bothered to check on the status of the water that was in these fishing ponds. And the water from these fishing ponds had been diverted off of this creek, some of it off of this creek, but most of it was just runoff. And then about 10 years ago, somebody woke up at the railroad or whoever the current water rights owner is and came in and forced these guys, because this area was now under private ownership, forced these guys to drain all the ponds. Saying you can't, that's our water. And even though they purchased the thing with the idea of developing a private fishing facility, that water was drained out of those ponds, and it stayed drained out for a couple of years until I assume somebody made some kind of commercial arrangement. But again, this is just a marker of how long-standing water rights are in the West and how seriously people take them.
Well, in Arizona, all the water is the Salt River Project. Right? I don't think you can even put the rain barrel out there.
I think that's correct. Well, Salt River Project controls all of that runoff.
Hey, I got a question for you.
I wanted to come back to something you mentioned about, tech companies and investments and people getting overly exuberant about it. And I wanted to just address briefly, because I've got a quasi-personal interest in the operation. I wanted to address the SpaceX test yesterday, and
blew up, sir.
Talk about the culture there.
Blew up, sir.
Yeah. That was the spectacular end of it. I don't know if you saw the cryon that went across the screen on SpaceX's channel when this thing came down, because I was watching it live in real time. The cryon came across the screen, and it was apparently from Musk, and it said, "Awesome test. Congratulations to the team." Mm-hmm. And I was going, okay. So I called one of my friends whose son runs the launch operations for SpaceX at Cape Canaveral, and I asked him, tell me what that meant. And he said, oh, well, they've got three of those SpaceX starships, three prototypes. So they will probably launch the second prototype within a week and fix whatever they identified on the launch and have it ready to go and launch it up again, and if something else breaks they'll test the third prototype. And I was fascinated by the speed and sort of quick reaction that you see in this engineering culture that SpaceX has developed, which is basically, look, this is why we call it experimentation. You know, Musk himself had said there was a two-thirds chance that this thing wasn't going to work yesterday. And instead, they got a great flight out of it. It did exactly what they wanted it to do. There was a failure of one of the pressurization systems in one of the tanks that they they identified, within minutes, as being the cause of the problem. But all their other systems performed admirably, and that made it a test. And I just looked at that reaction on the, everybody else says, well, it blew up. But I was going, yeah, but there was a lot of stuff happening before it actually crashed.
It actually had a lot of success before that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I mean, and I think you look at that, and I say to myself, that's what experimentation looks like, and that's what product development looks like. You put prototypes together, you test the heck out of them, and if they work, great. If they don't, then you figure out what went wrong. And then you put that into effect on the next prototype. They could launch the next Starship within a week, according to my source.
What Musk and his guys are doing
may very well.
It looks almost I won't say exactly like, but it's very similar to what who was the guy that had the Skunk Works and
Kelly Johnson.
The guy was
at Lockheed,
and those guys they just had their best engineers, and they just make stuff. I mean, they used to do that at Pullman. The guys who were the real engineers, they just go out to the, they'd put the drawing together, and then they'd get out there, don't put that there, put it over here. And they just do stuff, and if it didn't work, they just fix it.
Well, I mean, one of the great stories, I heard Johnson speak at the Air Force Academy when I was there. I mean, obviously, he was already a legend based on his designs in World War II and the Skunk Works designs in World War II, and then through the early parts of the Cold War. And I mean, one of the stories they told was when they cranked the SR-71 prototype out. And remember, the SR-71 came at the end of a development process for something called the A-12, which was an experimental interceptor. But he talked about taking one of the prototypes up and flying it at Mach 3.5 or whatever its top speed was, and they brought it back, and they noticed that the wings had actually deformed. The wingtips had actually deformed on the aircraft, and were being pushed into a particular position. And so he sat down with the engineering people and said, "What's going on?" And they said, "We really don't know. They didn't have a computer modeling capacity then." And they said, "We really don't know, but it looks like the atmosphere is trying to force this thing into a particular configuration." And he goes, "Well, okay, so the next prototype, bend the wings the way the stress lines are developing, and let's see if we can take stress off the aircraft." And so they put a sort of a dihedral on the thing in a bend down and flew it the next time, and guess what? It worked. And I mean, but that's the kind of thoughtfulness and sort of experimental culture of, well, okay, so we think it should go this way, but when we put the aircraft in play, the hand of God comes down and says, no, I want it this way. So we're not going to argue with the hand of God. So let's make the change. There was none of this. Well, wait a minute, that doesn't work with our numbers, and our numbers must be right. It was,
yeah,
okay, in real world situations, this is what we see. And so, we're gonna respond to what the real world tells us. I have a lot of admiration for what SpaceX is doing. I contrast it with the lockstep mentality. I mean, if this had been a NASA prototype, you would have seen congressional inquiries. But because it's private sector, they can simply say, we'd throw that away and we'll get another one. It really is an interesting mindset.
Well, but also it's sort of different in that these guys can, we would never have tried to have the thing come back and use it again anyway. Actually,
right.
You remember a guy named, let me go to break here in a few minutes. You remember a guy named Dr. Nicolades?
Not really.
He was the head of NASA for a little while, and He actually taught. We had this wacky class at Notre Dame. Of course, it started out as for the people in aerospace, which they beat up on these guys like there was no tomorrow, Lou, as you can imagine. Matter of fact, aerospace was a aerospace engineering was a aeronautic, whatever they call it. It was actually a 5-year major. Most places like Ohio State and stuff, but Illinois or Notre Dame, they jammed it into 4. So talk about, you know, whipping up on these guys. Well, one of the classes by senior year, you had kind of a feel-good class called Space Tech and Society, where guys would go and talk about just the history of the space program and all that stuff. Well, of course, all the goofballs, I mean, Kevin's brother and my roommate, Tim, of course, finds out about all these classes, right? So you got like 300 people in Space Tech.
Rocks for jocks.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much rocks for jocks. And nobody showed up. I mean, because it was easy, you got your A and whatever the whole. But they weren't going to drop the thing for PR because Notre Dame had such a huge ROTC program, especially in Air Force, that they just kept going. And the early classes, like you'd drop paper airplanes and stuff off the balcony at Washington Hall. Well, got so many people there, you couldn't do that. So I, of course, one of the dummies that actually went every day. I'll tell you, Lou, I remember more from that class than damn near my economics classes. I mean, they had a trio of three guys that came in and taught it. And one was head of NASA, one was something else. They were spectacular. And one of the guys went through, this is 1974, and he went through the whole routine about the shuttle and how the idea was to have a space, essentially plane, that would drive the shuttle up, drop the shuttle off. The solid fuel rockets wouldn't have been there. This thing would fly it up, you know, read like a huge 747, up to wherever the shuttle could take off and orbit on its own. That would fly back down, and then the shuttle would fly back down. Then they decided, okay, that was too much money, so they went with the solid fuel rockets on the side of the shuttle, which caused a couple of them to blow up, right? And he said, at the end of the day, it would have been much cheaper just to do it the way we wanted in the first place.
Well, the shuttle was the devolution or evolution, however you want to characterize it, of an old project called the Dinosaur Project. Dinasoar, and Maddie can look it up and put a link on it if he wants.
Lou, can you hold this day after break because we got a dash? We'll be right back.
Go.
But SP Futures are now down 750. We've got some leakage. We're taking on water, Captain. NASDAQ down 62 after being down a bunch yesterday. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Jocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and up-based Tyson Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. It's Mel Weber on the board. S&P futures now down 10. A little bit of a leakage here in the last few minutes. NASDAQ down 78 after a big down day yesterday. Dow is now down 12. Dow's not reacting as much. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down $2. Call that flat. FTSE up 44.7. As everybody's trying to point up here, now we're going the other way. Check around up 12.2%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 61.2. Shanghai up 1. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 92.3%. The way of review yesterday. Dow's down 105, not so much. S&P down 29, that's 0.8%. That's kind of a lot. NASDAQ down 243, which is a full 2%. So we had some movement yesterday. 10-year, down 2 basis points. This is the rate, 0.91. The Bund, minus 0.63, which is, again, lower. Japan, minus or positive 0.01. We've got oil up 61 cents, 46.13. Brent up 74 cents, 49.60. Natural gas up 2 cents, 2.46. And gold, which had a huge down move yesterday, is up today, 2.90, 18.41. Silver up a penny, so it seems like it stopped going down here a little bit. Copper unchanged at 3.51. Eddie, what do you got for us, Travis Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a great start on a Thursday morning here. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson all quiet. Same for the Southside Expressways and Lakeshore Drive. Suburban tollways are all quiet, too. In fact, we don't have any red on the screen anywhere, not even on the side streets. So everyone behaving themselves so far here on a Thursday morning. We'll let you know if that should change. Weather today, it's going to be an absolutely perfect day for December 10th. Sunshine, a high of 54. Right now it's clear and 34 degrees down, or excuse me, clear and 39 degrees downtown, going up to a sunny high of 54. For our Phoenix listeners, rain today. In fact, rain on and off throughout the day and a high of just 60 down in the Valley of the Sun. Right now it's rainy and 56 degrees. In sports, Loyola played their second game of the season, and they had no issue with Chicago State, blowing them out 88-51. And lastly, Thursday night football tonight, it'll be the Patriots, who are all of a sudden back in the playoff picture at 6-6, taking on the surging Los Angeles Rams. That game will be in L.A., and that's a 7:20 Central Time kickoff on Fox. Chief.
How come those guys can play and the 49ers can't?
The Rams are in Los Angeles. The 49ers are in San Francisco.
They're both in California last time I checked.
I know, but it's a county issue.
Ah.
Yeah,
wow.
Santa Clara County is not going to allow San Francisco to play, whereas L.A. County doesn't mind at all.
Now, if I was a township head guy, could I get out there and be like a little puppet on a podium and make rules, too?
If you were an elected official that can make rules, yeah, sure.
Well, I don't even know if I did. There's people making rules. We don't know they're supposed to make rules.
Like who?
Governors.
There's virtually no science involved in what Santa Clara County people are doing. I mean, the idea that you need to restrict outdoor gatherings of people or you know, shut down outdoor gatherings has no basis or almost no basis. In fact, it's especially weird up here because, you know, we're at 5,200 feet. The ultraviolet's much stronger up here, and again, the virus just won't make it in this kind of an environment. And I assume in the kind of environment you see down in California right now. So I mean, it's just silly.
Well, I wanted to get into you with this after you finish your thought from before the break. But
mention the dinosaur project, and you need to finish your thought on that.
Yeah, let me take that on. I actually have a note sitting here in front of me, Dinosaur. So the Dinosaur project was literally a preliminary space shuttle program that was going to involve powered flight, basically powered flight from a runway to orbit. And again, costs, you know, were astronomical, and they said, no, we're going to do this. We need to do it. You know, we need to do it through NASA. But it was literally a military space program, and the shuttle was the natural follow on to that, kind of a reduced package.
Right, and that's exactly what this dude was saying. I guess I want to roll into two subjects, Lou, because you're the one that can arbitrate. We have interesting stuff going on with our contributors to the show regarding where this is all headed, and I'm getting a lot of emails from people too that are genuinely pissed off at what's going on in a bunch of different directions. So it's not just one. And what has our
listenership not been pissed off about?
Well, what I'm saying is, we've got guys who, one of the guys writes me, and he's out collecting recall petitions for Jay Pritzker, and he's pissed off because evidently a friend of his had a flower shop that went under because they were shut down for a while. I guess they're open now, flower shop. I'm not sure, but I think they are. Meanwhile, Target sold flowers all the way through. And these are the kinds of things that are sticking in people's behinds, for lack of a better term. And, when this kind of stuff happens, I go back to, you know, the idea of people that are our age or Maddie's age or anybody, I say that weren't alive during the Depression. Everybody thinks that somehow or another the country just, you know, basically shut up and worked their way through and put their flag out. There were an awful lot of people who were wondering if our quote capitalist system was doing so hot. I mean, Armin Hammer's dad was in jail because he went to a communist meeting, because guys are saying, hey, maybe this is better. I don't think it is. I don't certainly as hell want to be communist, but I mean, when times happen like this, and it's clearly obvious that some people are getting everything and some people are getting nothing, the people that are getting the nothing, they end up questioning things, Lou. And Carl has been mentioning, and I don't think a violent dude at all. He saying we're getting close to the day where people are just going to say, I'm not putting up with this crap anymore. And maybe it's because of the media, and maybe, you know, I don't think the coal miner in 1933 had much of an outlet, and probably couldn't read that other people were just as pissed off as him. It could never get together. But something crazy's happening here. And I don't, get back, it kind of fits in what you're talking about. I don't think people elect Tony Preckwinkle as the county, Cook County, God knows what, head of the board, with the idea of giving her dictatorial powers over what closes and what doesn't. I mean, people don't think that way at all. I mean, I don't. I mean, the thought.
So again, we're going sort of back to first principles here.
They're all different subjects, but they're the same subject. I mean, what?
Well, the idea of how much government we should tolerate or allow is crucial. And one of the ways government, and I'm amazed, it's astounding to me that the elected officials in Chicago and other major metropolitan areas, and this is where you see the contrast most directly. It's astounding to me that they do not put together the idea that if you want to tell people don't do something, and you want it enforced by general compliance, the way to do it is to demonstrate to people that you are in fact competent and have the overall best interests of the polity at heart. And so in Denver, in Chicago, in Portland, in Seattle, in Washington, D.C., to name just a few places, you have a situation that where the elected leadership is ignoring simple, basic, fundamental aspects of government, it's like public safety. You have massive catch and release programs going on because the DAs or the state's attorneys are refusing to prosecute people based on whether they are engaged in social justice activities or whether they're engaged in, quote, minor, unquote, property crime. If you're robbed at gunpoint, or if you're beaten and robbed, even if it's $20, that's not a minor crime. And it's actually a reverse of the kind of broken windows policing that proved so successful in places like New York in the 1990s and dropped the crime rate there dramatically, or at least that's a commonly accepted theory. The failure to do this, the failure to provide the most basic civil services in terms of police protection and civil unrest protection, causes everybody else, the rest of us, to look around and say, why should we listen to you people on masks, on public gatherings, or anything else? Because you are selectively enforcing the law to support your social justice narrative or your particular political narrative. And as a result, you have no credibility with us. You know, you talk about how dangerous the virus is, but you allow large public gatherings. It's okay to go out in crowd together on the streets protesting the killing of George Floyd, but it's not okay to crowd together at a football game. What's the difference? And why? You know, why are you tolerating or why are you promoting one and not the other? This kind of inconsistent application of the law causes the complete distrust of the elected officials to the population.
It
causes the rest of us to look around and say, you know, we're not going to put up with it, ultimately.
If you don't mind, I want to take it one step further because it's, and I don't want to really talk about this Texas suit on the election. Although it falls under the same heading, when you have a, if it was me, you know, with you as my right hand guy, if I were to say, look, this virus is pretty screwed up, I'm gonna have to shut some stuff down for a while. My first question would be, Lou, what do I got to do to make this legal and make it look like it had, not make it look like, and prove to people that it had. That the process was followed, that the information was out there, that the thing that I think is getting people really, really pissed off, you know, and Carol obviously is on the leading edge of this, is I don't understand how, on a legal point, the first 15, 30 days, I'm going to say that the governor, without even knowing the rules, I'm going to say he has some power somewhere in some law that says he can declare an emergency for a certain period of time. And after that, he's got to essentially prove to the legislature. I'm just guessing a little bit. To me, that would make sense. That doesn't mean that all government makes sense. Or that Tony Preckwinkle has some powers if a bomb landed here, a dirty bomb, she got to do some stuff. The mayor gets to do some stuff. But when guys just abuse that and never go to the legislature, and now here it is in September or November or December where we are now. I mean, I don't see how the head of the owner of the flower shop doesn't sue the governor personally or whatever and say, this is illegal. You didn't follow the process. Here's my damages. How do they continually skate on that? Well, at some point here, it's just illegal. I'm not saying they're there yet. I don't know the law bad enough, but at some point here, don't you want to avail yourself of the process and not be such a pompous ass that you're going to go on your own and let everybody. I mean, I don't see why you would ever do that. I wouldn't.
Well, okay, so let's talk a little bit about at least my perceptions on this. To a great extent, none of these people engaging in this kind of behavior were called on it by the press because much of the coronavirus bad news was seen as a way of bashing the president and going after his chances for re-election. So you have a significant or a situation where the governor of New York can basically kill, you know, 12, 20, 15,000 of his citizens by ordering them into nursing homes, and there is no and reinfecting people there, and there is no political cost to him. There's no blowback. In fact, they're giving him awards for this incredibly stupid move. And so when there's no political cost, when the average person who turns on the local news or who turns on CNN is not hearing, hey, guess what? Our protocols for managing this virus are actually killing more people than the virus is, or perhaps more significantly, are costing us more life hours, because the people that are dying as a result of our prophylactic efforts are younger and have much more life ahead of them than the people that are dying as a result of the virus. We're actually causing a more loss of life hours with our prophylactic efforts. There was no challenge on that. The guys who came out to say that were ridiculed publicly, and there were calls for their removal from faculties and being delicensed as medical professionals. So if there's no public cost for this stuff, then these people, the governors and the political people mayors making these decisions are going to move forward because they can.
Well,
they
where
can
does
take
the...
this power, and it's very useful to have this power, even if it doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually solving the problem.
But someday,
from a legal perspective, let me just finish real quick.
Yeah.
From a legal perspective, the courts are going to let you do something like this for a short period of time. You're starting to see much more pushback on it. You saw the first inklings of it with that Supreme Court opinion just before Thanksgiving. And there's been a couple of recent decisions out of California in which the judges are telling the elected officials, if you didn't do a public policy analysis, sort of a classic public policy analysis showing cost versus benefit, then and if you didn't do that, you can't move forward with these arbitrary and capricious, that's a legal term, arbitrary and capricious actions that appear to have no basis in science or reality with respect to the effect on the growth of the virus, and especially with respect to the cost of the people that are being subject to these shutdown orders. And that's what you're saying, finally.
Well, I at some point, I guess my question...
Oh, and by the way, the press is starting to come around and publicize this, much like they are now publicizing the Hunter Biden situation.
Right. Well, I guess why would people take that chance? Is that you would just get away from the process? And the interview that I heard from I don't know if you've listened to Face the Nation last week. I keep bringing this up, and I'm somewhat of a fan of Margaret Brennan, but I do say this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard say on a national TV. She's interviewing the mayor of El Paso now, and unfortunately, I was listening on the radio in the car, and some siren went by. I missed just a piece of it. She said something about, he's closing restaurants. Why aren't you closing restaurants and bars? Well, I closed them after 9 o'clock. Okay, so what's the science on that, that between 8 and 9 you're okay, and 9 and 10 you're not? Anyway, I'm not going to go there. But
because the virus can tell time.
Yes. Well, he basically said, we think it's coming from restaurants, bars, small gatherings. And, oh, by the way, it's spread pretty dramatically in big box stores. And she said, why don't you shut those down? And he said something, and I don't know what he said. I can't. They're considered by Washington to be
essential services.
Essential services. He goes, I can't shut them down. And she said, and I'm sure if she heard it again, she'd take it back. She's not a dummy. She goes, well, why don't you close more of the other places to make up for it? And I go, I almost ran off the road. I'm like, what did she just say? But why? If you're one of the other places, and this guy hasn't dotted every I and crossed every T as to whether he has the power, how do you not have legal course of action? Well, I sell blue jeans. Those guys sell blue jeans. I'm closed. They're not closed. By the way, you're supposed to go to the legislature on this. You didn't do it. I mean, when does it reach the point where I actually have a case in a court that gives a crap?
Well, I mean, first of all, most of the legislatures did not come after these people in any meaningful way, and I'm very disappointed in that, but probably not surprised. But you are starting to see some judges and some court cases where the filings are now sufficiently developed that a court can say, okay, this was an arbitrary capricious decision, and this you damaged whatever. The bottom line is that and this is the same thing that you saw with the election, you know, declare a victory and you know, tell everybody to shut up. The status quo was reinforced from the very beginning by a compliant press that was not going to challenge people on, hey, what you're doing doesn't seem to be working. Even now, you are not getting the kind of analysis from the sort of basic fundamental analysis that you see a lot of epidemiologists doing, which is looking at graphs and looking at cases, looking at hospitalizations and deaths, and saying, okay, well, here's where we put the mask in place, here's where we put the distancing requirements in place, and there's absolutely no difference in the curve. You can't tell any effect on the curve. And it's not just true here. It's true in Europe. It's true in Asia.
Oh, sure.
I mean, these kinds of things, at least in our culture, do not seem to
The question I'm trying to ask you, in fact,
here in Colorado, we're finally seeing, you know, the hospitalization and everything else slow down as this wave of cases drops off, just like it did in New York, just like it did in other places, and it has nothing to do with the preventative measures. Nothing.
Well, Lou, where I'm trying to zero in on that, obviously either clumsily or you're dodging me as a great attorney you are. When does the harm caused by, say, doesn't matter, county person, township person, governor person, who acted without authority, the harm... When does it become actionable?
In most cases, it's not going to be actionable because of sovereign immunity, which is a principle that goes way back and says you can't sue the state without the state's consent. So sovereign immunity is going to protect almost all of these governments. All they have to do is come in and say, look, we were doing our best. This was a guess. Under the circumstances, we shouldn't be held accountable for the damage that we did because we were doing the best with what we had at the time.
Okay, I'm not.
There are ways to defeat that, but they involve intentional, almost malevolent kinds of decision making processes that are. I don't think you're going to be able to prove in this case.
Well, I mean, it seems to me whether or not you can prove malevolence or not, probably not. And in fact, I don't think guys are being or ladies are being malevolent. But the point that you don't, if you have emergency powers for 30 days and it's 9 months later, are you just that friggin' lazy that you don't get authority? I mean, how do you?
Again, let's look at what these people are responding to. Your political leadership is going to respond to criticism from the press and mobilization on things like Twitter and other social media platforms of a groundswell against their decisions and against their policies. That didn't happen, and it wasn't going to happen.
I'm just
because of the political circumstances at a national level that we're saying we got to use this. You know, we've got to accuse the feds of mismanagement, and so whatever they're doing in Washington, we are going to do something else, and we're not being held accountable for it. You didn't see Christine Whitmer being raked over the coals on the national mainstream press for her decisions to restrict the sale of garden seeds and flowers.
I'm just a simple guy from the South Side. I'm saying they close the Chief and Lou's bar, okay, and all of a sudden we stay open and somebody walks by and drops us a $500 ticket. How do I not be able to go to the local court and say it's over after 30 days? The governor doesn't have or the mayor doesn't have the power to do this. Chop chop. I mean, this is an easy one. How does that not happen?
You may be able to get an injunction to stop the law, but I doubt if you'll be able to get damages for your loss.
Okay, but I'm saying they don't seem to be able to stop it either. They're just getting run over.
Again, where's the willingness to stop it? Because from a political perspective, and people ought to be held accountable for this at the ballot box, from the political perspective, very few politicians were willing to jump up and say, listen, we need to think about the damage we're doing here, and let's take some action to mitigate that damage. And oh, by the way, where's the science behind what we're doing with these shutdowns? And at the point we are killing more people or causing more damage with the shutdowns than the virus is causing, we need to stop that. There were very few people doing that because the drumbeat again in the press was, COVID's deadly. It's a disaster. And nobody wanted to be the single voice crying out of the wilderness saying, no, it's not. The stuff that we're doing is a disaster.
Okay, we're sort of running out of time here. I have a question. Where is the incredible mantra from top to bottom? We got 2 minutes. Where is the incredible mantra? And the poor, this guy gets his restaurant shut down in Naperville, right? It was a few weeks ago. And so they talked to the lady who's the hostess, and she goes, basically, this is such BS. I look out the window, and they're basically butthole to elbow over at the Walmart, and we can't have people 6 feet apart in here having breakfast. She goes, who's running this gig? I mean, what's going on here? Well, how did these people be like a tick on a dog from these big box places that have been acted like nothing monopolist? They've been monopolist the whole way. How is it that those guys now are absolutely so embroiled in our livelihood that we can't do without them? No matter how many people get shut down, we can't shut down the Walmart or the Home Depot. You know, are these paying people off? Jay Prince got stock in there or what?
Chief, one of the jokes that you know my wife and I were making here in Denver was that law firms were essential services, and that law firms had to be allowed to operate as an essential service. And I said, boy, it sure is a good thing to be part of the union, isn't it? You know, the guys writing the laws are all lawyers. We're all lawyers. We're all taking care of each other. I mean, give me a break. I'd love to be able to say that lawyers are crucial to the operation of the economy, but you and I know different. And that's just another marker of the kind of arbitrary, capricious decision process that was driving so many of these.
Well, when you talk about the vaccines, Lou, how would it feel if Chief and Lou were to write a column? You would never put your name to this, and I would have the people who get the vaccines first. They're the serfs that have been working the whole time. The guy that when you go in the Myers is actually stacking the shelves. The garbage truck drivers, of course, all these guys have probably already had it because nobody cared if they got it in the first place. And I think the guy who delivers the sandwich to Jay Pritzker deserves a vaccine before Jay. I'm sorry, but I do.
I would agree.
And the five guys out, the illegals cutting his back lawn, I think they deserve it before he does too. If they're essential, they should be the guys that are getting it. But I have a feeling they're not going to be. Just saying.
Yeah, well, wait till, that was another topic I wanted to talk about.
Well, we got a dash here, but
cards coming up.
I'm going to leave you with this. I'm going to piss you off for next week. So your guy loses two games, and now they shouldn't be playing.
Which guy are we talking about?
Coach K.
Oh, yeah. I thought the timing on that was a little fortuitous.
Now, if we'd have won last night, this is the best thing going. But anyway, Lou, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. Hopefully, you're out shoveling some snow like you seem to want to be.
And every day I'm shoveling.
We'll talk to you next week. We'll be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Low and home base, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Dan Janine. Well, SP Futures down 5.25. They were almost unchanged when we came in, and they were down 10, 11. Now they're down 5. We're kind of all over the place here, but mostly the downside. NASDAQ down 53, and they were the big loser yesterday, and they're down again this morning. Dan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing all right. My question to you is, I give the bond report every morning, and if I was... remember when CNBC used to have... I can't forget her name. And... the cat Johnny Bench went on and said, "You're the bond babe." What was her name? Way back in the day. And then, of course, the bonds became so dull, she ended up going somewhere else, that CNBC didn't even worry about bonds anymore. Talk about the market all over the damn place, and these 10-year rates are, they never move. And in Europe, they never move.
Was her name Kathleen Hayes?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
How is it that no matter... which way the market's going, up, down, all over the place, and the different views on day-to-day, this stuff never moves. Is it because everybody's afraid to make a move because they're going to get spanked down by the Fed or what?
Well, they say that the bond investors are the smartest ones. They're not really chasing the market, right, like with equities. So they're not and they're, you know, their goal is generally income, you know, as opposed to capital appreciation. So I think we're in a relatively stable environment, which is why now I don't think we're seeing a whole lot of movement. You know, I think the same reason that we're not seeing a lot of volatility in the equity market right now. So we went from a highly volatile market to a stable market, and you know, bonds have not really, I don't think the bond market has really viewed this whole period as, you know, one where we're going to be seeing, you know, a huge amount of inflation in the near term. But we have seen recently, though. I mean, if you know the Australian, I think in Australia and in Spain, we're now seeing negative rates there. So there has been some movement. But I would agree with you. There's not a whole lot of excitement on the bond side. I had a couple ideas this morning that I would call conservative ideas that are good buy and hold if you want to have a position in the bond market. And again, that's what fixed income does, is it provides that stability. If you have a portfolio where you want to buy tech names, and you're going to be in names like Tesla and Amazon that are all over the place, having some bonds to offset that is actually not a bad idea, to give your portfolio some consistency and stability. You know, so we have a couple of ETFs that we use in our Kratos High Income Fund, and that fund has actually done extremely well this year and over the last 5 years. But Vanguard has a short-term bond ETF, and that's BSV. And Vanguard also has a short-term corporate bond ETF, and that's VCSH. And because rates are so low, I tend to like to use Vanguard's. We favor Vanguard's ETFs because they have lower fees, And when you're already paying, it's hard to pay 50 basis points when rates are as low as they are right now. But those two have been steady eddies, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years. They just gradually creep up. They do not have, you don't have to worry about interest rate risk as you would with the longer term bond. And, you're not having to pay a big fee to get a broad exposure to the short term corporate bond market. For a little more yield, you can get, the iShares has the SHYG, which is the 0 to 5 year high yield corporate, bond index. And that particular ETF also, the fees are relatively low and you're staying in the short end of the curve. So although bonds aren't maybe boring, you can still pick up some yield. These names are, I think they've been up 4 or 5%, this year, and that's a good steady yield as an alternative to cash. So there's a couple of ideas right there that are, again, stay on the short end. I would not be buying long dated bonds right now.
Well, it was, I keep bringing this up before anybody cares about it, probably, but it was, to me, it's the mirror image of the early 80s. But it really yes. took forever there for, I mean, I say me. I showed up here in December of 80, I think, Dan, and it, to me, it was like, God, if we don't go out as a country, this has got to go the other way. I mean, these bonds rates are going to come down and the market's got to go up. I mean, we're at 800 on the Dow. And these companies somehow are managing to survive in this environment. I can only imagine if they weren't paying 15% to borrow money overnight, how well they do. Yet it was year and three quarters before I was proven right, but I was long the whole way, and I think by the time the day happened, I don't even know if I was still long. You know, the time I think if I was, it was a meager amount compared to what I started out with.
I agree with you, and I think you hit a really good point. Is that, you know, the cost of capital for companies? I mean, when it's this low, it's great for the bond market. I mean, it's great for the equity market. It's great for companies. Not only have they seen the pretty sharp cut in corporate taxes, but we've also seen rates remain low. So that is what has continued to fuel this, the economy. It's continued to fuel companies, and it's continued to keep their cost of capital down. So, you know, the same principle, obviously, with mortgage rates. I heard last week that 10 years down to 2.75, and or the 30-year, I should say, which is based off of the 10-year Treasury, is down to 2.75 for a national average. And that's only going to, even though prices have remained up, that's still going to help buyers in this market. And so it's the same principle. As long as rates stay low, I think our economy is going to continue to remain strong.
Why Dan, do people, and again, I'm not going to, I mean, I know it's the party line, and it's so intuitive that nobody wants to listen to me, but the time to buy a house is when the housing market, it's on its ass, and the mortgage rates are 8%. Because you're going to get your house for a cheap price. And by the way, when the mortgage rates return to normal, you just refinance. I mean, it's way better to do that than to chase the damn thing only because you're getting the money for free. It's not about you. It's about who are you going to sell it to?
Right. No, that's true. And it also really depends on who's buying and, you know, whether you're a cash buyer or you may be a young couple that's starting out, because then the refinancing option may not be there in 5 years or 3 years or that's a good point. No, and I agree with you on that. But you know, I think people have waited longer than they did certainly when I was that age in the generation before me, and it's been tougher for a two income household that has really good. Really good salaries to professionals having had to wait it out here because rates have been so high, especially in the bigger cities. And now there's been a little bit of opportunity, I think, and there's also been movement where people can go to parts of the country where housing is less expensive. So I know we have seen a huge boom in the area where I live here in Southwest Florida in construction, both, roads and infrastructure, but also a lot of housing developments and things are selling.
Well, I mean, it's such a bizarre situation because people confuse Well, you confuse your investments with yourself. You certainly don't look at your house as an investment. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, you might, or I might, but I'm sure as hell not going to get the girlfriend to think that way. I mean, it's not happening. It's my house. I live here. What are you talking about? You're not going to win that one. I might as well be talking to the poodle, right?
Right.
So, I mean, right now, the headline here on CNBC is breaking news. Homeowners are $1 trillion richer thanks to the pandemic-driven housing boom. Well, unless you're willing to go home and say, honey, guess what? We're selling this place and we're going to go rent for 2 years. I mean, it doesn't do you any good. All you're doing is trading dollars. If we sell this place and we want to get another bedroom, it's still going to cost us another $40,000. I mean, we got a three-bedroom house. We want a four-bedroom house. We're still going to – it's the trade that makes – I mean, how many people do you know that bought houses in the, say, 2008 era will tell you, holy crap, Dan, I bought this house at $250,000 and now it's worth $190,000. I'm getting screwed. But I have a hunch that our friend Dan is smart enough to say, wait a minute, what about the house you, now if it's Maddie and he's young and that's his first house, end of conversation. But if it's you or me, the next question ought to be, wait a minute, what happened to the house you bought in 2000 for $100,000 that you sold for $165,000 so you could buy the other place? You're not counting that? No, I'm not counting that. So from day one, you're still okay, you know, because, but that's not the way people sort of look at it. But a question I wanted for you before you get into some of the stuff you're doing, which is obviously very interesting for people and me, the mentality, again, I don't want anybody going back to the 80s. It was a bad time. But if somebody were to say, hey, Dan, you just won $1 million. You'd say, great. And then I'd say, but you're not going to get it till, the year 2031. You'd almost say, when the rates were 15%, you'd almost say, keep it. say exactly keep it, but what was it worth to you? 75? But now, which was kind of an odd way of looking at things, because $1 million is still $1 million. But now you look at DoorDash comes flying out, and the thing is, the thought of you having to wait 20 years for this company or whatever it is, and if the thing is coming out, it's now they got it worth what, $60 billion, which essentially
crazy.
Is 20 times revenue the way I got it counted. Now you ask yourself, all right, when is this company going to make, I'll say, $5 billion a year and send out dividends of $2 billion? And the answer is, not in your friggin' life. What are you even...
It's happening this lifetime, maybe a competitor or another an industry that has, there might be some technology might bring along a new name, which, DoorDash is great, and I've used them, but they're... I know a lot of people have used them, but they're, they weren't, I don't think they were named 5 years ago, definitely not 10 years ago. So they're, it's the changing technology. And I think what might be different now, I think what you're alluding to is that there's, a sort of a sense of patience. There's been a sense of patience with investments. And that's the one thing I've had to remind clients of. And I think the real estate analogy is a good one, that, look at the home that you're in. Are you in there because, you need a place to live and this is your primary residence, or are you really looking at it as an investment? And so I absolutely agree with you. There's a short-term focus, which is kind of getting in the way. And I think it's also, we try to stay away from that. We consider that noise. So we're trying to, we're long-term investors. We will take advantage of short-term situations. But I think for the investor that do-it-yourself investor, you got to be really careful of those trends, because we're talking about people that are now used to getting information instantaneously. So I know Goldman came out with the recommendation on Tesla, and I had a couple clients say, hey, this is Goldman's recommending it, and then it ran up, and then it's run down, and I think it's still trading down now. But that type of volatility, if you're willing to, watch it and you have a, what do you call it? You can stay on top of it moment by moment. You're a day trader, then it's great. But if you're looking at it as a long-term play, when you enter and when you exit is what counts.
I guess the whole mentality is nobody thinks that there's any cost to waiting at all. Where in the 80s, I mean, if you didn't have your money somewhere...
Oh, there was, absolutely, because rates were... Right, absolutely.
But, I mean, it should be somewhat in the middle. I mean, the idea that the Fed did both things in my lifetime, to me, is unconscionable. I mean, talk about right. an F paper by right, two different right. Fed heads. You know, I mean, Fed heads, how's that for a word? I mean, the idea, it should never have been either way. It should be a risk-free rate should be, what, 3%, 2.75? And we should all work off things that are, quote, normal. So, you know, yeah, if this company is going to make all this money in 2 years from now, I'll forego my 3.5% of the T-bill. But if it's 40 years, well, hell, I'm better off getting the 3.5%, right?
Right. No, I agree, yeah. I mean, we kind of look, because I come from a bond background and have a, you know, and a high yield bond background, we tend to look at cash flow. And we're looking at Qorvo, which is QRVO right now. We're doing work on that, and it's a semiconductor business. And they are positive cash flow, you know, positive net income. So they don't necessarily fit the balance sheet stereotype of companies in the industry. But one of the things we like about them is they're focused on cash flow. And those companies are the ones that will weather the downturns.
You mean they actually care about income?
Yeah, well, they have positive income, which is... they do care about income.
What did DoorDash, where they lost $49 million last quarter? Was that the number?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, they better go out and get some more money because they're using it fast.
Absolutely, yeah. The thing I would say, the advice I would give to investors is if this space interests you, and if you like names, and if you like doing the IPOs, and I have plenty of people who do, and I have friends who do as well, and I'll say that's great, but keep some, you know, definitely diversify, and then keep some money in a BSV or a short-term, you know, high-yielding instrument. Keep a little bit of powder. Keep a little bit of diversification because things can go down just as quickly as they can go up. And I guess I just use the Tesla example as what happened over the past week from the time Goldman made the recommendation and the price target of 800, you know, going from 5-something up to 650 and then back down to 570 or something today. So, you know, if you can stomach the volatility and you like the, you know, the roller coaster ride, great, but just make sure your point of entry, look at your point of entry and again, look at your exit strategy.
Well, Daniel, we're starting to
all turn out to be Amazons.
We're starting to hear drums along the Mohawk. We're starting to hear a little bit of a drumbeat, not just me for once, and the inflation stuff and how it, you know, it might affect some things. I mean, today we're actually getting CPI, I believe, so... that should be somewhat. We'll see if we get a surprise number there. Russell was saying yesterday he's kind of afraid for the number today, but I mean the bonds have not reflected any of this. Now I can't tell if this is the drumbeat from 50 miles away or whether it's getting close. But the interesting part, somewhere I think in the next, you know, 2 years from now, if you and I are still doing the show, God willing, somewhere we're going to see this 10-year rate. You know, be 1, 1.25, 1.5, maybe 2. Because right now, if you're a believer like I am that the real inflation rate is like 4 or 5, that puts our you know our negative interest at you know 3 or 4, so or maybe even higher or lower, more negative. I mean, what's going to be the catalyst? What's going to be the you know the August of 82 moment to where somebody comes out and says, you know, we just got problems and The history, I actually went back last week and was looking, Dan. There were weeks or months where the Fed raised the discount rate or the federal funds rate like 2 and 3% in a month.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the history of that, I mean, does anybody even know that that happened? I mean, I'm not predicting that happening again and sure as hell don't hope it doesn't. But it's not like all of a sudden, once you're behind on this stuff, the catch up is pretty ugly.
It's tough. Yeah, it there's no question it's tough. And I think the other point that's important to think of is when you are looking at rates so low, I mean less than 1%, a 25 base point move is 25% move, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a significant move. When you're looking at, you know, 1 or 2% on 15%, it's you know, it's not as from a percentage point of view, it's not as large an increase. So any increase that we see at these levels is going to have an impact. There's no question. And where it comes from, I think, is going to have to do with how the economy evolves over the next year. And I think I would agree with you that we're more likely to see higher rates over the next year, because we're more likely to see a continued stabilization and improvement in the economy. And, you know, we do see prices ticking up in certain areas already, and that's going to only continue. I can't see that.
Well, I mean, in your world, in my world, because we like to, maybe yours a little bit more than mine, you look at the percentage move. Yeah, a move from 0.5% to 0.75% is a big deal in terms of percentage terms. But if somebody calls in and wants to buy a stock, and I say, hey, guess what? Today, instead of making you know 0.5% on your brokerage account, we'll give you 5/8. It's really not going to deter anybody from buying that stock.
That's true. Yeah.
Or if I say, guess what? We're paying 6 today instead of 4 yesterday. Somebody might say, let's just leave it there, right?
No, absolutely. That's true. The thing is that the search for yield right now is tougher and tougher, and the equity market looks more attractive. No question about it. And you know, as I've always said, you just have to pick you have to do your homework, and you know, some of these broad based indices will help. I think if the trend is positive, which I believe it is now, so this is probably not a bad time to be in some of these indices, whether they're the short term corporate bond or whether they're an equity index that's going to give you broad exposure. I think we're in a favorable environment. We have a favorable environment ahead of us. But again, diversification.
Dan, when you
things can change.
When you analyze these companies, which you do, and then you try and pick on a certain level the guys that are paying 4%. I mean, you're going to try and find the guy who's the best guy paying 4% and much more likely to pay off your clients than the next guy. I mean, that's what you're good at. Now, what do you do when you walk in and we've still got this pandemic wandering around? I wish we didn't, but we do. Let's pick your asphalt storage place. I mean, when you walk in, I don't think this is going to happen, but if you were to say, wait a minute, you know, there's a chance, I don't think the governor of Texas will do it, but so let's say they got some big contracts in Illinois and somebody's going to say, hey, guess what? We don't want any of these projects because it doesn't look to me like guys laying asphalt are wearing masks or whatever, not that, you know, whatever. The chances of that industry or that particular company you're talking about, how do you gauge the chances of them being affected by some either intelligence shutdown, stupid shutdown, whatever, or were being affected by their biggest client just got shut? I mean, I don't know how I would gauge that. I don't think you're ignoring it.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. The advantage we have is that we talk directly to management. And if we don't believe that management is being straightforward, because I've been doing this since the mid-80s and talking to management since the mid-80s, and if we don't believe they're being straightforward, we're going to move on if they're not going to give us proper information. So those questions come up very early in the discussion. In fact, those now are some of the first questions we have when we get on our first call with the new company. The asphalt company, for example, it's a storage company, so they get paid whether or not, you know, it takes an extra month if the government delays the project by a week or two. They're still getting paid for the time that it's, you know, the rent, basically getting rent on storing this place. And the other thing I was going to say is come down here to Florida because there's plenty of asphalt being laid.
Okay.
There's really not been any restrictions here on construction activity.
We haven't been here either.
So at least from my little part of the world, we're seeing that. And we know that that's what's happening in other parts of the country, but especially other parts of the world right now. But yes, those are questions that we ask management directly. We look at competition and what's happening there. We look at their both vendors and their clients. So we're looking at both sides. We look at their competitors. You know, we look at the management team and what they've done in the past during times that might be challenging. So we ask a lot of those tough questions, and we're not just looking at the financial statements quarter by quarter. We're really getting in to know the management team and understand how they handle situations with employees and staff and You know, I guess in the energy industry, there were some issues. We had some investments in some of the, like, Neighbors Energy, which is a driller. The bond investment did extremely well, but the, you know, the company, depending on where they, their drills were located in certain parts of the world, Latin America had very strict restrictions during COVID, and that did impact some of their, business for a period of time. So, but the company was forthright with that. It wasn't like they were hiding it. You know, when you ask the question, they're going to give you an honest answer.
Well, I get the impression that you're about as steady Eddie on this stuff as it goes, but I have a feeling that there is a, you know, there's arrows coming at you, not to make a reference to American Indians, but there's arrows coming at you and me that we don't even know where they're coming from. And it makes me a little nervous. I mean, if I was even to the asphalt business, what I'd say is probably 100%, you know, not much of a problem. How do you know that I think you guys would ask the question, hey, these guys that just laid 45 miles of asphalt on LaGrange Road in Illinois, by the way, are they getting paid? I mean, because I don't think Illinois is paying anybody. Now, if they don't get paid,
yeah, no,
by the way, do you get paid?
No, they are. Actually, no, they absolutely are. That's they have contracts with workers. Some of them work directly for, depending on the organization, some of the workers work directly. Some of them are contractors. They've set funds aside before they actually even begin a contract. So, like with the energy companies, there are funds that are already set aside, and we don't have any company right now that we own that's having trouble paying employees.
Okay,
Have companies and, you know, employees being furloughed. We, you know, those are the industries we stayed away from. I have had a couple of, I've had some reverse inquiry to get into some names like cruise lines and all that, but those generally are not the type of investments that we make. We're wanting companies that are cash flow positive, that have, you know, that have fixed contracts with their, you know, with their outside contractors and with their employees, and that's an important part of our due diligence process when we're getting to know companies, how they treat their employees, what, you know, where their challenges are on the cost side, and if it's a labor intensive business, then we really want to dig down and talk to some of the operational managers and, you know, get to know the company a little better. But I wouldn't say it's bulletproof, but I'd say that we do a lot of homework in that area. So
yeah,
that's
would,
an area that, that
I would be.
But I would agree with you in general. It has been an area, and if you look at the airlines, for example, and the furloughs, and those would be sectors we would not we are not involved in, and it would not be involved in even if the economy was better.
Well, if you hired me as your junior compadre, and we went in and did one of these interviews, I'd be sitting there going, I know there's another question I should be asking today. I just don't know what it is. it just seems like that kind of world we're in. But I know you've covered everything you've thought of for the last 30 years. The question is there another one here someplace? Is your state going
to... Right. We've very seldom have had issues with you know, keeping conversation going and making sure that, you know, we discuss those points and manage, you know, senior managers, and especially the good ones, the good CEOs, they're used to the tough questions. So they kind of like hearing more about, you know, what's going on with your employees and your staff and your labor situation, what's going on with your, you know, not the typical questions they get from analysts. So once you get them talking, you know, the conversation goes, and then you're able to get a lot of those other questions answered, which oftentimes can make a decision or break a decision for us if we're, you know, we're in those discussions.
All right, but hey,
I do miss, honestly, having the face-to-face, because I think you can read people better than you can on a Zoom call. You know, I think management is a little more comfortable in person talking. I think as we all are, right, than if it's over a screen. But
I have a feeling you're pretty good at body language.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden they give you a China one trip, and the next time it's a paper cup, you know something's wrong.
No, those are.
Dan, are you?
Are
you around this morning? We need to give you a buzz after the show. Are you around?
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to leave my number again for.
Okay. All right, talk to you in a bit. SP Futures now down 9. NASDAQ Futures down 59. Be right back, Mr. Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Just met over on the board. Mr. Frank Fahey with us in a second. We have jobless claims came in a lot hotter than expected. 853 versus 753. We had CPI coming in at 0.2 versus 0.1. So, not so sure either of those numbers are, well, I guess if you're looking for inflation, they got some. Jobless numbers, maybe they're just not backing off, are they?
No, they're not.
S&P futures down 6, well, wait a minute. S&P futures down 10. I get the one that's accurate here. NASDAQ futures down 67. Dow futures down 9. Around the rest of the world, we've got DAX down 21.1%. FTSE up 36.5. CAC around up 7.1. So, pretty quiet over in Europe. Asia, Nikkei down 61, also quiet, 0.2%. Shanghai up 1, call that flat. Hang Seng down 92.3%. Bonds, we've got 0.92, so they're down 1 basis point. Bund minus 0.59, the Bund is stuck there. 0.57, 0.58, 0.59, and it'll move. Japan, same way, positive 0.01. Some days 0.01, some days 0.02. Oil, up 69 cents, 46.21, its highest. We haven't seen over 46 in a while. Brent up 76, 49.62. Natural gas unchanged, 243. Arbob up 2 cents, $1.30. Couldn't get stuff under $2 last weekend, man. He had to pay 215. This is bull. Gold up 380, 1842. Silver up 16 cents, 24.15 after they got hammered yesterday, both of them. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, all kinds of sports. Are we going to have sports, not have sports? We can't figure this out.
Well, Coach K's losing, so he doesn't want sports anymore.
No.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We've been quiet all morning on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, which is good news after we had a bit of an uptick yesterday morning, but back to quiet this morning. No issues coming in on the Kennedy or Edens. Eisenhower and Stevenson have been quiet all morning. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Off the expressways, there are a couple of issues this hour. Looks like South Racine Avenue at Huron, there is a crash. And then down on the south side, there's a rollover accident, Chief, at 76th and Costner that has crews on the scene.
How the hell do you roll over on a side street?
Good question. Also out in the western suburbs, Cass Avenue at 75th Street, there is a crash as well. Weather today, it's going to be an absolutely perfect December 10th day weather-wise. Sunshine, a high of 54, very pleasant. Just like yesterday, and even a few degrees warmer. Right now, it's crystal clear and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast on and off all day today, and a high of just 60. Right now, it's rainy and 56. In sports, the ACC Big Ten Challenge continued yesterday. And after the Big Ten won 6 of the first 7 games, the ACC won 4 in a row. But Virginia had to cancel their game with Michigan State. So the Big Ten ends up winning the challenge 6-5. With just 11 games being played. Northwestern lost a one-point game to Pitt, even though Northwestern led the entire way. Pitt's first lead of the game came when they scored with inside of 5 seconds left.
Yeah, it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
And that was it. So Pitt steals one in Evanston. To finish out the challenge, IU lost at Florida State in overtime. That's Indiana. Clemson blew out Maryland, and Nebraska lost to Georgia Tech. Loyola played their second game of the early season, and they blew out Chicago State 88-51. And lastly, the Week 13 in the NFL kicks off tonight, Thursday Night Football, and it'll be the suddenly resurgent New England Patriots at 6-6, traveling to L.A. to take on the Rams, who are firmly in playoff position right now. That's a 7:20 Central Time kickoff on Fox. Chief.
Ed, if we have to ask you, how did that Mike Glennon, that's the same stiff who was on the Bears, right?
Yeah, that's right. He's the third string. Well, he was kind of on the scrap heap, and Jacksonville had so many injuries at quarterback, they needed someone, so they brought him in. He's actually looked decent, to be honest. He hasn't looked that bad, but yeah, Mike Glennon's back in the league.
Is there any team that could possibly make a quarterback look worse than the Bears?
No, there's not. The Bears, for whatever reason, I guess ever, they've never been good offensively. I mean, I remember Eric Kramer had one really good season in the mid-90s. The team wasn't that great, but he had a really good offensive season. I know that, obviously, you know, they've had little spurts of offense, but for whatever reason, they've always been a defensive and special teams-driven organization, and that's just their foundation, and that's how they do it. And that just doesn't work, especially in today's NFL, as we've seen. I mean, yeah, if you can put together an 85 Bears defense, you can be very successful for a short period of time. But if you don't have a quarterback, it's very hard to have a decade level, you know, run of success.
Or offensive line.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, the 85 team, and even before BW, before Webby, the 63 team, the idea that they were, the defenses were juggernauts. I mean, they were some of the best in the history of the game. But the offense, even though McMahon was not Johnny U, they had Walter Payton, they had Jimbo Covert, they had Willie Gault. I mean, they had guys. I mean, it wasn't like they had.
But it was Walter Payton way past his prime.
But he was still a hell of a ball player.
It was absolutely. It's still Walter Payton. I mean, he's arguably the best running back of all time. Certainly in the top three. And then Colbert.
Yeah, but who were our quarterbacks in the 70s, late 70s, when Walter was in his prime?
Well, I'm saying is those teams, I mean, the 63 team had Ditka, had Johnny Morris. I mean, they had guys, right? It wasn't like the offense was not on the same scale as the defense, but
was nowhere near on the same scale as their defense.
Right, but they're way better than this group.
Agreed. My point is, though, for whatever reason, they've always built around the defense.
Right.
And I don't know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I get it, I guess, but the sustained level of success, there's a reason why they've never had like the 10 or 12 year run like the 49ers had in the 80s, like the Cowboys had in the 90s, like the Patriots have had in the 2000s. Like, we're going to see with the Chiefs now for the next 10 or 15 years what we've seen with Rodgers, where the Packers are in it every year, because you need a quarterback like Johnny Unitas, like you mentioned. You need a quarterback that can be there for 10 or 12 years. Yeah. It doesn't matter the other players around him. You just build around him.
Well, right.
It does matter. You have to have an offensive line to protect them.
You do.
Behind a great offensive line would have been great.
I don't know if he'd have been great. He would have been better.
He lasted longer than any quarterback we've had for a while.
That's true. That's true. But he never, I mean, never did anything.
He was sacked constantly.
Well, look what these guys, and look at these other teams, man. I mean, and I'm not giving you any grief because you know this better than me now. Look at this Pittsburgh team. What is that? Who does that team remind you of? It's before your time. Where Ben Roethlisberger likes to go back. He likes to drop back. He's not going to run anywhere. They don't care if they run or they'd like to be able to run, but they can't. That team, it is exactly the same team as the Chargers with Dan Fouts. They got an offensive line that you couldn't get through with a bulldozer. If you ask one of those guards to pull, they'd say, me?
Right, but what did the Steelers do last year? Absolutely nothing, because Roethlisberger got hurt in week three, and without a quarterback, it doesn't matter if you have a great offensive line. A quarterback is the only thing that matters.
My point is, they all fit together.
They do, but this year the reason why they're so good is because they've kept Roethlisberger healthy.
Well, they always have
a good defense. They always have good receivers. They always have a good offensive line. The quarterback is the only thing that matters.
They didn't bleep can their strategy and go out and get a bunch of guys that can pull in guards that can't pass block. Because they knew they were getting Big Ben back.
That's true.
You put Big Ben on the Bears, he'd be the most bruised man in football.
If you put Big Ben on the Bears, I guarantee they would be five games better.
They would be better, but he'd be with this team.
He'd
be so beaten up you couldn't find a spot that wasn't black and blue.
There's no one's doubting the fact.
Yeah, Paul should be playing now.
No one's doubting the fact that the offensive line's important. I mean, of course it is. That you want to run block, you want to pass protect. I get it, 100%. Defensive line's important too. But Aaron Rodgers, for many years, had one of the worst offensive lines in the league, and yet they would still win 12 games a year because the guy's a Hall of Famer and he's spectacular. And he would get sacked all the time, and it didn't matter because he was great.
They had some guys. I mean, it wasn't like they were. Those years that I went through the drafts, they had Belega. They had
guys, but that would always get hurt by week three, and then Cutler or Rodgers would be on his ass for the rest of the season.
Well, what I'm saying is they had some sort of depth. They at least had draft picks. They had some talent.
Better than the Bears. There's no doubt about that. But this idea that you can put a mediocre quarterback.
That's a low bar.
You can put a mediocre quarterback behind a great offensive line and have a great team. It's not going to happen.
No, but you're
okay.
But let's put it this way. McMahon would not have been a household word if he didn't have.
McMahon wouldn't have been a household word if he didn't have the best defense of all time.
And he was protected. He had, what, two number ones and a number two draft pick on the line in front of him. It showed.
Yeah.
And he had paid, and he had. Plus, the tight end was terrific. And Willie Gault, you want him on any team, right?
He was a speed guy.
And anyway, it all comes down to it comes down to planning. But now with the amount of injuries, you're right, Matty. And you got to have depth too. And that's what the Patriots, I think, are the. Well, if they still are, but when I used to read up on this stuff when I had more time and we didn't have COVIDs and stuff, they are probably the absolute masters at manipulating the bottom 10 guys on the roster. You're getting the best bottom 10 guys you can. The Bears, and they're so concerned about giving it up a number four pick for two number fives, and where they will constantly get a body that can help you out of nowhere, and the Bears just don't do that. They never have.
The Bears wouldn't know who to pick with those two number fives.
That's the big thing. Yeah. The Bears, every team would like to do that. The Bears are just incompetent.
Yeah, well,
and I think Belichick can coach them, or his assistants can. Those guys get better.
That said, take Brady off that team, and the Patriots are mediocre as hell, even with Belichick, even with all the draft picks. They're mediocre because Brady's gone.
I think Brady's gone because they were leaking some talent.
They were leaking some talent, but if Brady was still – I mean, they won 13 games last year.
Well, I'm not – yeah, because you lose
– this year they can't get out of their own way.
Well, you certainly lose your continuity with Brady gone.
Arguably the best quarterback of all time.
Well, if he would have...
Even at 43, he's better than what they have
now. But he brought Gronk with him. Look how much he's helped him down there.
They won 13 games last year without Gronk.
What I'm saying is he's helped them down there.
I mean,
I think he's got problems with his new coach.
Gronk is replacement level at this point.
He's
a Hall of Famer career-wise, but at this point, he's replacement
level. He still
level.
Gives you that one or two plays a game where he's still a terrific blocker because he's a big man. And he still gives you that play a game where he goes to block a guy and peels off and they forget about him. And he gets you that 10 yards right when you need it.
He does. I mean, he mentally, he's still a Hall of Famer. Physically, though, he just can't.
He's not going to go.
He can't get the separation.
He's like 30 pounds less than he was when he retired, too. Yeah.
Well, all right, Frank, we've got. We're leaking here this morning on these jobless numbers. Are we. What are we doing here? These numbers all of a sudden are not.
We're in a small range for this bull market. Right now, you know, we're 3,600 to 3,700. 3550 to 3700, and we're just wallowing around in there. It's a lot of nothing right now. Back in the day, we'd be watching football or basketball on TV in the pit.
Yeah. Well, what we have the choreography from the people, and again, this is. I mean, obviously, I'm a money manager, and I work with other money managers, and you never want to lose a client, you never want to do anything, but at some point. I mean, you don't ever want to get on national TV and say, what I suggest you do is call me up and withdraw your funds. I mean, you know, that the market's not the place to be. But you can take that to the absolute extreme to where, I mean, everybody's talking about every piece of news is good news. What are they talking about, Frank? There's some good, some bad. I mean, like usual, but I mean, it seems like there's some bad news around. And when you look at some of the, and now bad news, what does bad news do for you? Well, if stocks are cheap, who cares if the news is bad? They're cheap. But if you're ignoring bad news when stocks are sort of high, I don't know. What did you think of the big IPO? And then what Uber came out last night? They were high too. I mean, what are we? I mean, how many years is it going to take, assuming no competition, for these guys to grow into that price?
Well, you brought up a good point last night. How much could they make if every person got every meal in the states? Or, you know, what percentage of the state population would have to get every meal through DoorDash in order to justify that price level?
What do they make if I order up, two Italian beefs for Audrey and me and they show up? And, it, you know, Italian, it'll be $20. And what do they make, $2, $3?
With no overhead.
Well, they got
and if there's a coupon with it, Luke's Beef pays for that coupon, the $5 off, the $10 off. They don't pay for it.
All right. So what is the if I have no way to walk me through this? I've never done it. What is the charge? What does the driver get?
Maddie might be a better person than you. I live in suburbia where I can drive wherever I want to, so I don't do that anymore.
Well, I've personally never used DoorDash, but I've used Grubhub, and I've used, I think some of the other ones. But, I mean, how it works is I think the prices on the app, I don't know if they're inflated compared to if you walked into the place or not, but you have the prices right on the app of whatever items you want, you know, at the restaurant or whatever. And then there's a service fee, and then there's a tip. And it's $5 for the service fee or something like that, and then there's whatever you're going to tip. And I don't know who gets what or how it breaks down. They don't really itemize all that for you.
So
I would assume they get the bulk of the variable fees. I do know I was talking to a restaurant owner that said he hates DoorDash because any promotional stuff they put out, he has to pay for himself. So if they say $10 off your order or $5 off your first order, DoorDash doesn't pay for it. He pays for it.
Well, our buddy Butcher Al that owns a hamburger place right by us, so he says that they, you know, they end up using all these guys, but I haven't talked to him in a while since all the bars are closed. So if I decide I want three hamburgers delivered from Al's place, how do I decide who I get to bring it? Do I go online? Whoever pops up, I grab it?
You would have the app. So you download whatever app you want to use. If you want to use DoorDash, use DoorDash. If you want to use Grubhub, use Grubhub. If you want to use all of them, like some people have Uber and Lyft on their phone, and they alternate back and forth based on
deals, like Frank mentioned, or whatever. And then whatever app you use, then that's what you use.
But if I just call over to Al's place, I know this would be very old school. If I actually ring up my phone and call them and talk to them and say, I want three burgers, I need them delivered, then what? They pick somebody, or they have their own delivery?
Well, they would have their own delivery, or they potentially, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I would assume that maybe they have a direct deal with a delivery service, whether it's DoorDash or somebody else, that handles their delivery. But then there would be no app, and that's actually what the restaurants prefer, because then they don't have to pay the fees. They all want you to order from them directly, and that's been a big battle cry over this whole pandemic, is they're telling people, stop using Grubhub. Call us directly or use our website directly, and then we'll bring it to you, whether you know they have the son or daughter drive it over or they have their own direct relationship with some delivery service.
Okay.
I know the store where my son was working as a waiter in Lincoln Square before he moved to Boston, and they had relationships with Uber and Lyft drivers who would just stop by and deliver stuff.
Yeah,
and
that makes sense.
It was cheaper for them just to have somebody, you know, a guy would pull in front and say, you got anything.
Well, that makes sense.
That does, yeah.
What's,
And so, they're cutting out the middleman.
I will say, too, when you call directly to the restaurant or order directly through the restaurant's website and you do not use one of the apps, the delivery service apps, your food is hotter. I'm telling
because
you.
Because they care.
Because they care and they come right away. Whereas the DoorDash guy is making 15 deliveries and you're just, he's just going in the order of, you know, whoever's closest to his car or whatever at that point, right? So you might be 14th out of 15 and your order might be sitting in his car for 25 minutes.
We had a client years ago.
And they don't have a Connie's Pizza truck delivering it right. So you're keeping it warm.
We had a client years ago that did, he delivered pizzas. He was an interesting guy. He's a great softball player, and he played softball his whole life. Then he was a post office guy, and he always delivered something on his side. I don't think he ever married a family, but he said it was so much easier. Once he got over to the Asian chow, he did much better because it travels better. It's always hot. Your clientele is so much better than the pizza people. a couple of drunk guys wanting a pizza at 2 in the morning. You're better. If you order up Chinese at 10 o'clock, you get a much better crowd. Stuff's always hot. They know how to package it. It travels well. There's never a complaint.
It is. It does definitely travel hotter than pizza does, or almost anything else. Something about it. When you get Thai food or Chinese food or whatever, man, it arrives and it is hot and it's well packaged. At least in my experience, it's always better.
It's almost
than
better carry out than it is there. Where
yeah, it's really good.
All right, Frank, we got to talk about the markets. We're leaking here again. With the Nasdaq down 100. We've got the SPYs down 17. There'll be like a couple of days in a row if it stays here. Not saying it will, but these guys
are still within 1.5% of all time highs.
Well, that's true, but
I mean, it's the trend. What happens is you and I, as traders, look at the risk first, so we see the bad things no matter what. Where other people go, look how much money I can make.
Right.
And so what happens is you and I see those bad things and we go, I can't believe it's here. I'm not going to buy here. But we're in a range. And that's the reality.
Well, I won't say you're missing. You're not missing it. But last night, when you see stuff that should be obvious even to you and me, and then all of a sudden I've been commenting the last few weeks about, God, these stocks that are really like going up from like 100 to 300, I don't even know who these companies are. I mean, I would never have guessed DoorDash was going to be $60 billion. I mean, it reminds me somewhat of 2000. And one of the guys last night on CNBC was saying, what's with the market? He goes, what's with the market is the stuff that's moving isn't in any of the averages. I mean, your Zooms, all the kinds of things that have gone from, you know, $40 to $250 in the last 5 months. He goes, they're not in the queues. They're not in the S&P. All the action is out of the indexes right now. I mean, the real action where, you know, you're getting crap to double in 2 weeks. Because you're right. The indexes, they keep grinding higher, but they're not, I mean, the Russell's made a nice move to catch up. That part I get, but they're not, I mean, the S&P hasn't doubled in the last 4 weeks where a lot of these stocks have. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, we used to sit in the OEX pit watching this stuff in 1999 and go, who are these guys? they'd showed his building with the name on front, and one guy'd go, "I got $5," and said they rented this sign. You know, I mean, the action that the Robin Hood people of the world are in, they're not even in the stocks you and I look at, Frank. I don't think.
No. And the reason they're not listed is they don't meet the requirements, whether it's capital or income, cash flow, to be listed.
Well, the people...
You know, it's like Vancouver came down to here, the penny stocks.
Well, what I was saying earlier about the DoorDash, and I was, you know, quizzing, and you guys obviously know a lot more than me. The same thing with the Uber. I mean, I would want somebody to walk me through it, not because I'm just a big old dummy, but if I bought the stock, I want to know what's my cut. Right? I mean, does anybody
even
know?
Well, you're nowhere near first in line.
No. What's my cut? I still don't know what my cut is in the DoorDash by owning DoorDash. You know, I mean, I'm going to say, wait a minute, until I can figure that out, I sure as hell am not putting investors' money in there. I mean, if all of a sudden these guys double, what do I get? Anything? I mean, they lost $49 million last quarter. What has to happen for that to be positive? I don't even know.
$49 million? That's nothing compared to $80 billion.
Well, it's something to you and me. Anyway, Frank, thank you very much, bud. We'll talk to you on Monday. SP Futures down on 20. NASDAQ Futures down 111. So we're leaking. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.